Chapter 1. Blaine Michener. Hart, Senate Office Building. Secure Briefing Room, 219. Washington, D.C. 6 months before the event. Blaine Michener's phone buzzed as he crossed the Senate Office Building lobby, his Italian leather shoes clicking against marble that had witnessed a century of American democracy. He slowed just enough to read the message from an old FBI contact in Memphis. "Jake's clean, passing all drug screens, hitting parole requirements. P.O. says he's doing good. Want me to check in next week?"
"Yeah, thanks for watching out for him."
Relief and shame twisted together in his chest. Jake was 3 weeks out of prison, and he was hearing about it from an FBI contact instead of his kid brother. Maybe Jake would make it this time. He'd done 7 years for breaking into a pharmacy while high. 4 tours in combat and 4 more in the CIA had carved something out of him and left him crawling through memories that wouldn't let go, chasing silence in pills and booze, which never worked. At the time, Blaine had been buried in covert work for the CIA, wiring lawyer fees from a Beijing safe house and convincing himself that it was the best he could do. He hadn't had a choice. His job was to protect millions, and Jake had made it clear he didn't want saving. Not from the drugs, not from the memories, and not from him. Same old choice. Save the world, or save his brother. The pattern hadn't changed in a decade. At the security checkpoint, Blaine caught his reflection in the glass partition as he powered down the phone. His dark hair was immaculate, and his expensive charcoal suit tailored to his lean frame. He looked more like a diplomat than someone who'd spent 12 years running covert operations in hostile territories. That was intentional. The cerebral analyst, not the operator. The suit was armor, his appearance a weapon. Let them see the Georgetown education and the State Department polish. Let them forget that before DHS, before the analyst desk, he'd been the one in the field. Blaine locked the phone in the security box and signed into the skiff. 2 weeks earlier, he'd met privately with 5 agency heads to discuss what would happen if Congress refused to act on what he was about to brief. Today was his last official attempt at the legal path, before more desperate measures. 4 congressional leaders waited inside. Senators Paula Herrick and James Caldwell, and Representatives Cameron Lander and John Stegner. They had been hand-picked. The only 4 who had voted against authorizing Neurocentra for U.S. military use. Unmoved by Burchett's relentless lobbying, and immune to his usual tactics of pressure or blackmail. Their records were clean, their mutual conviction unrelenting, and they had a history of standing alone when it counted. If anyone in Congress could be trusted with the truth, and had the spine to act on it, it was them. "Ladies and gentlemen," Blaine began, his supervisory intelligence analyst credentials projecting behind him. He kept his posture relaxed. Nothing aggressive. Nothing that would put them on the defensive. 12 years in the CIA had taught him that intelligence work was 90% presentation and 10% actual intelligence. "What I'm about to show you represents the most significant threat to our republic and to human cognitive autonomy in our history."